All right. Thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. 500 outlets, 177 countries, countless apropos applications, TuneIn app, iHeartRadio app, Stitcher app, Twitch.tv. It is Tuesday in our first hour. It's time to check in again with Sail Sport Talk with my co-host, Karen Lyle. How are you, Karen?
I am doing great. Just flew in this morning.
Just flew in. Boy, are her arms tired. And not on camera because we have the other webcam here on Twitch on Alex Salagub. He is the Vice Commodore of the Golden Gate Yacht Club. Thanks for coming in, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Karen, take it away. What is going on with Alex here?
Well, first of all, I want to mention that Golden Gate Yacht Club had that opportunity to sponsor America's Cup. And so you have how was that experience for you?
Yeah, I mean,
you're the Vice Commodore now, and so you went up the path.
Correct. Vice Commodore. I started off at the club as the waterfront director, rear Commodore, now Vice Commodore. So I got to live the excitement of America's Cup. I was involved in the Sail GP planning for the last 2 years for the most part. So that was super exciting as well. And I think after this last or first Sail GP and hopefully more for us coming, it was a success and it was great for all ages.
We all saw, especially those of us who work down here, we saw that amazing pier area getting built. What is going on with that area now?
Are you talking about
For the America's Cup?
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure what's happening with the pier where the America's Cup Village was.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was rebuilt, and I believe the cruise ships are using that now.
But
for Sail GP and America's Cup, we lost the America's Cup in Bermuda. So now the focus is to work towards taking that same concept of catamaran racing and bringing it to the backyards of major cities and excite people about sailing in their backyard, more sailing as a Formula One kind of GP style racing.
Yeah, we've seen that especially up on the foils. Just one more America's Cup question, because I remember in the 80s they talked about, you know, Dennis Conner was almost like a celebrity in the America's Cup. You know, what do they say? If the trophy leaves, the skipper who loses it, his head will replace it on the pedestal. Did it send shockwaves through the community when we, as Americans, did lose that America's Cup the first time?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, our next segment's guest sitting next to us, when the Aussies came in and they had the bottom of the boat covered up, we knew that there was something going on down below that boat, and we weren't exactly sure what it was. And now when we look at the foiling that we see today, it was the beginning of trying to make boats rise out of the water and reduce the draft, you know, and the drag on the bottom of the boat, right? So, so that was a sad day. I was in Australia, in Sydney, just I guess in February for the first Sail GP, so there was a lot of joking around about how we've come full circle with that.
Mm-hmm.
Good for us. We went right back and took the trophy back and held on to it for a little bit longer there. But hats off to the Aussies mm-hmm. for getting the job done.
So, Alex, you're interested in the beginning of things, when sailors begin, before they even conceive that they can sail and start out with you. And Golden Gate Yacht Club has a youth sailing program, and you have some ambitions and plans for that. What do you see for youth at the Golden Gate Yacht Club?
Yeah, so I think probably about 4 years ago, we started looking at the youth sailing programs and where they might have been prior to the Cup and post-Cup. And we said, all right, it's time to get back in there and really start focusing on the 8 to 11-year-olds, kids that are just trying to learn how to sail the little opties, the little square, you know, tub-looking boats, and then get our kids into high school sailing. There's many clubs around the bay that are doing an amazing job, but we really wanted to focus on all the kids that wanted to get out on the water. One thing that I was able to do when I first came to San Francisco was volunteer with the Blue Water Foundation, which is amazing. We would take kids out on a 40-foot boat, sailing on Tuesdays and Thursdays from all of San Francisco Unified School District, and just watching their eyes light up out on the water and seeing the city and the possibilities that they could do something other than maybe what they were growing up with in their neighborhood really drove me to continue to volunteer. And it brought me to my youth when I started messing around with sailboats and being on the water in Long Island, New York. So I'm basically trying to take what I saw there with all volunteers all the time with Blue Water and make that happen at the Golden Gate Yacht Club. So the first thing we did was try to find some coaches. And in San Francisco Bay, it's tough to find U.S. Level 1 coaches. So we went into the club, and we found our best sailors from college that were young professionals now in San Francisco, and said, what about if we invested in you? Would you invest in the kids? So we were able to send them to their Level 1 certification, and now we have seven U.S. sailing Level 1 instructors that are giving their time twice a month to coach youth and anyone in the Bay Area that wants to come out to the club and give it a shot.
A couple more questions for Alex Salagub, the Vice Commodore of the Golden Gate Yacht Club. And I know from just doing these segments with Karen over the last few months that the sailing community wants to erase this elitist thing that you have to be Larry Ellison or Ted Turner to go out there, which I think is great. But just as far as the Bay Area is concerned with this whole, you know, USC scandal or Stanford, it was the sailing coach. Is that kind of just a one-off that's embarrassing for Stanford, or did that affect the sailing community at all?
I would say I can't really speak on behalf of what happened with Stanford and USC, and, you know, that whole scandal seems to be covering many sports. So I do say that, you know, knowing the kids that are coming up in the Bay Area, this is one of the best training grounds in the country. You know, a lot of the kids that we see, currently we have kids at St. Mary's. We have them at Santa Barbara.
Yeah, my alma mater.
All right. So we have, you know, probably six or seven kids from last year that are sailing in college now. And seeing them come up, I really can't say who's on their teams and don't really know too much about that piece.
What do these young sailors tell you is the reason that they sail?
Yeah, so I met with a bunch of kids probably in 2015 at their coaches' meetings days in the high schools. And I did a presentation. I put a video together on why kids sail. Why would you even join high school sailing in the first place? And how do you get to what now they know as America's Cup racing? It was very interesting and eye-opening to see some of the kids say, I'm here to find friends. Other kids want to go out and learn how to sail and be competitive without hurting anyone to win, right? And then I started realizing that this sport is that perfect sport that is both left brain and right brain. You can go out and try to muscle your way through it and just be a 12-year-old boy, or you can be a very mature 12-year-old young lady and think about the physics and think about what actually makes this boat work and go out and win and beat the guys in this sport, which was really eye-opening and great to see the kids. And then we had kids come out and say, that was an awesome video, but, you know, what are you doing for the catamarans, right? Do you have catamarans at your club? Because they know that America's Cup, you know, is these foiling catamarans. So,
Just a couple minutes here left with Alex Salago. What would be, outside of don't stand up in the boat, like some of your very rudimentary, elementary things you teach in the beginning?
Yeah, so probably one of the biggest things, there's terminology on the boat is one of the hardest things when it comes to sailing, right? No lines are a line. We have sheets and we have halyards. The one thing that actually probably has the most appropriate name is the boom, right? So the boom on the sailboat is that one thing that the mainsail is hooked to, that if it goes across over your head and you're not ready for it, it's going to boom, right? So the kids get that one pretty quick. So a lot of times I'm normally, when I'm sailing the Opti kids, whether I have them on a long leash out in the dock, right off the dock, it's always heads down, right? So sometimes there's just a lot of heads down, boom, you know, and they get it immediately, whether they're eight or, you know.
So when someone says, should I turn right? You go, starboard.
Yeah, exactly.
One of those things.
Yeah.
One final question, Karen.
Do you have any young people that you are mentoring right now that you see have potential for the Olympics or for SailGP or one of these races?
Yes, absolutely. So we have currently 16 high school kids in our program. And they're at all levels. And that's the beautiful thing. They're from probably right now, most of them are probably coming from four schools, but we've had all over San Francisco, all the schools. But a couple, probably, let's say four, two teams have really come to the top where we're not only focusing on high school level sailing, which is in the FJ, but we're pushing them into 420s. We've got a separate coach that takes them out on the 420s, teaches them how to trap and how to sail with the kite and stuff, which then leads to boats that would go to the Olympics. So,
trapping,
yeah,
so is, for those who don't know, it's hanging over the side of the
boat.
Yeah,
exactly. It's exciting where you're on the trap and you're hanging off the side of the boat and, you know, holding on.
Yes, looks so quite perilous. Alex Saligub, Vice Commodore, Golden Gate Yacht Club, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We really appreciate it. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Malcolm Page will join us in studio as we continue on Sports Byline. Karen Lyle and Rick Tittle, SailSport Talk.
This is Dominic Jimenez here with a Sail Sport Talk spotlight on the Lady Washington Tall Ships Pier 39 to Aberdeen journey. As you recall, we started to follow the sailing journey on April 21st, when the Lady Washington and Hawaiian Chieftain shot cannons at each other as they sailed by the 1,000-plus spectators on Pier 39 in San Francisco, California. The two ships then began their journey to their next port in Eureka. The Lady Washington made it through the Golden Gate Bridge and was a few miles out when she encountered sea conditions that caused her captain to pull into safety at Bodega Bay. The Hawaiian Chieftain was further up the coast and arrived at Eureka first. The Hawaiian Chieftain then hosted an adventure sail with Eureka's mayor and postmaster aboard for the USPS Building Bridges special postal cancellation in honor of the Lady Washington's 30th birthday. The Lady Washington is a full-scale replica of the original Lady Washington of 1787, that made an unprecedented trading voyage around Cape Horn. In 1788, she became the first American vessel to make landfall on the west coast of North America. A pioneer in Pan-Pacific trade, she was the first American ship to visit Honolulu and Japan. The original Lady Washington opened the black pearl and sandalwood trade between Hawaii and Asia when King Kamehameha became a partner in the ship. Gray's Harbor Historical Seaport's Lady Washington has captured the hearts of people all along the Pacific coast, where she provides educational experiences for students, the public, and training for future career mariners. She's appeared in several motion pictures and television shows, including Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, Star Trek Generations, Once Upon a Time, and Revolution. On June 8th and 9th, you can find the Lady Washington in Port Angeles in the clear waters of the Strait of Juan de Fuca in Washington State. The Olympic Mountains are a dramatic backdrop for the Port Angeles Maritime Festival, where the Lady Washington will take the public on adventure sails. Among the quaint shops and fresh seafood restaurants will be a regular schedule of fun community events during the festival. The Port Angeles Chamber of Commerce and its partners are sponsoring this festival for all ages. This year will be bigger and better, with waterfront activities, military vessels, historic displays, and, of course, adventure sails. The town's scenic waterfront will be buzzing with energy, entertaining casual observers, Victoria Ferry passengers, and lifelong sailors alike. Visit www.historicalseaport.org for tickets and more information. This has been Dominic Jimenez with a SailSport Talk feature brought to you by Grays Harbor Historical Seaport.
She said, I want Tittle.
Interrupting all programs.
This is Radio Clash on Pirate Satellite. Orbiting your living room, cashing in the Bill of Rights. To an army surplus or refusing all the lights.
Rick Tittle can usually be found at He Baby Mama House.
Thank you for that, and welcome back to Sports Byline USA. Around the world on American Forces Network, as we continue on here on a Tuesday with Sail Sport Talk, Rick Tittle with Karen Lyle. And if you're watching on the Twitch.tv app, you see the face of Malcolm Page. Malcolm Page, the chief of Olympic sailing with the United States Sailing Association, but also an Olympic gold medalist twice over for his native Australia. And let's just start with this, Malcolm. Australia is like 1% of the world's population, but they win like 20% of the Olympic medals. Why are you such a sporty lot down there?
I'm not sure how it all began, but yeah, no, Australians have sport in their culture. Certainly, I know I grew up in that sort of environment with my family, and it's part of your DNA. You get outdoor. Admittedly, we have weather, and when you talk about Sarnie, we have a lot of water that surrounds our island, and everyone lives on the coast. So, you know, it's a great opportunity and a great attraction to do all those sports. And mm-hmm. I know that's something that I grew up with. If I didn't have a bat and a ball or a racket or a boat underneath me, there was something going wrong, and I hated to go to school. So there was always a better alternative.
I never really thought about that, but yeah, outside of like Canberra, everybody's on the coast, right?
Yeah, pretty much nearly all the population lives around the edge. So yeah, we're very fortunate that way.
So now you're working for U.S. Sailing, and just recently you came to the San Francisco Bay Area with your family, and you're setting up something new. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, I think today or maybe tomorrow is the one-year anniversary that I've been living in the Bay Area. And I started this job coming up to 2.5 years ago, so running the Olympic Department for USA. And I guess one of the things I recognized when I came in the job is that we weren't leading these young talented athletes on that I guess Olympic pathway and towards success, not in a sustainable, succinct way. So one of the things that we recognised was we wanted to create a centre of excellence. And talking to the Bay Area folk, the Sarnie community, combining my ideas with their vision, we've come up with an idea to build a new base, believe it or not, on Treasure Island, which is smack bang right in the middle of the bay, right under the Bay Bridge, and is combining with the Treasure Island Sailing Centre, which is a great community sailing program that's run on the island, combining with that with the US sailing team and all the things that we talk about for the top end of the sport. And we're doing this partnership together. And to me, this Centre of Excellence is going to hopefully deliver career pathways, education, and not only, I guess, technology adaptation, but then the correct training procedures to take them from talented youth sailor to an Olympic champion.
There's no doubt Treasure Island is going through a facelift. Almost all of it is being raised right now, so it's a great opportunity to get in there. But we also know in the United States, we don't have a state-run Olympic committee. We do have that Colorado Springs Center where people will train, but most of our athletes have jobs or they're in school and it's a little bit more difficult. So what are those challenges for you when you have these athletes that say, I'd love to dedicate myself to this, but I got to get back to UPS or whatever I'm doing?
And I think you just hit the nail on the head. The governmental structure is certainly different here in the US compared to a lot of other Western countries. That certainly makes it a little bit more difficult, certainly from my perspective. How do you deliver the bread and butter of the program and keep those resources rolling, not only within a quad, but then also quad to quad, because you need to be able to build up that and create that legacy, that intelligence from quad to quad, because you will get better. I know I did that as an athlete, so why can't we do that from a programming standpoint? But to me, making this a viable career path for these young talented, USA has just as much talented athletes as my native Australia country or New Zealand or the Great Britain or any other great sailing nation. But they probably have more of them, you know, when you look at the population mm-hmm. and the access to the sport. But how do we make that a viable career pathway for them? So this Centre of Excellence is obviously a big piece in that puzzle. And like I'm saying, you know, having, when we sit in the bay here, having connections to the Berkeley University, the Stanford University, and all those other colleges that are in and around the Bay Area here. And of course, this has got to be emulated across the country. But then also the businesses that are here in this city, great city, and they want employees that have the same values as our athletes, people who are focused, good with time management, you know, want to get the job done. So athletes, I think, bring that right background and focus that companies are looking for, and hopefully we can dovetail all that together. And then also when you present it to their parents about their little Johnny or little Mary, they can see that it's a great option for them as well, that they're not going to completely, you know, maybe waste their great education that they've got and take a chance on and doing something, well, I like to think pretty great within the sport and obviously for the country as well.
Mm-hmm. And Malcolm, next week we're coming out, SailSport Talk is coming to Treasure Island to meet some of your Olympic athletes that are training. Tell us a little bit about who's coming in and what's happening with that.
Yeah, we've got a camp happening starting this week, and certainly at its crescendo point next week, where we've got the two laser class boats that represent at the Olympic Games. So the single-handed male, so the laser full rig, and then the single-handed female, which is the laser radial. They're running a camp next week in the Bay Area. They want some strong wind practice. So we've got our top national athletes that are going to be here training, plus we've brought in a development pathway athletes. So kids that are around that college age, some of them even into their teenage years, that will be signing with these all-age national athletes. You know, some of the stars that are going to be here next week is Charlene Buckingham, who was the Rio representative in the laser class, and Chris Barnard, which is, you know, nipping at his heels and one of our top athletes, and he just won one of the prominent international European events a couple of months ago. And then also on the female side, we've got Paige Raley, which is already a two-time Olympic representative, and also a world medalist a few times over in that class. So she's going to be in the Bay Area training, as well as Erica Reinecke, which is again another young athlete and a Rolex Yachtswoman of the Year representative. And those two are going hammer and tong, training with each other and obviously for that single Olympic spot. But they're going to be also investing in the next generation, the athletes that will hopefully be representing in 2024 and 2028. So it's going to be a great opportunity to see all these athletes playing together.
A couple more questions from Malcolm Page, Chief of Olympic Sailing, United States Sailing Association, and, of course, two-time Olympic gold medalist himself. The last Olympics, and I'm not an expert in sailing, but I see all these classes. You mentioned laser, then you hear 49er, fin, 49er, FX, the NACRA, the multi-hull, sailboard. It can be a bit confusing. So someone comes to you, and you're like, what do I start out with? It's just a certain dinghy, and you just go from there?
Yeah, I guess there's two sides to that coin. Yes, every bit of equipment or class that is representing that event at the Olympic Games has its nuances. But the way I like to look at it, to win an Olympic medal, they all add up to 10. If you sail a certain type of boat, you might have to have stronger qualities in certain areas. So if you're sailing the laser class, for example, you have to be very good in fitness and very good tactically. Still adds up to 10, but you might have a bigger points within those. It might be 4 and 4, you know, adding up to 8. And then if you sail the 470 class, for example, that might have a more even spread of the technical, the tactical, as well as the fitness across those sports. But then when you move into the faster classes, you need to have more skill about your tuning and how to sail a boat very fast, opposed to maybe the tactical. So those are all the sort of components of what will make an Olympic medalist. So when we look at the athlete, we've got to see where their skill sets are and what they can learn. And then also you look at some are single-handed classes and some are double-handed classes. Mm-hmm. Some are one sex, so male or female, and there's others that are mixed. So we've got to balance all those things and what sort of personality they have and how can you make the best team possible.
Malcolm, what two muscles are the most important muscles for a sailor when they're out there competing?
Well, I'd say probably the two, and I don't know which. It all depends on which moment in the boat, but I'd say your core muscles is number one from a physical standpoint, and then the next most important muscle would be the one between your ears, the brain. You know, sailing's been described as the on-water game of chess. And when you're doing fleet races and racing somewhere between 20 to 30, 35 boats on one racetrack, you've got to be able to look over your shoulder and see what your competitor do and try to work out what his game plan is. And then obviously combine that with your game plan to win. And it's that's where that mental game really does come in.
It's not every day you get to meet a two-time Olympic gold medalist. So I just wanted to ask you, of course, the first time you did it and you're hearing the national anthem and all the emotion, but from Beijing to London, to go back and do it again, was that a steeper hill to climb, or you knew what you were doing and it was easier? Because they usually say to repeat is harder.
And even when I think about the World Championships I won, actually the first World Championship was the hardest one for me to win. Getting over that hurdle, understanding how you got that yellow jersey on and how do you deal with that pressure. And then it became more normal. I only got to do it, I guess defending it once at Olympic Games, and I mixed emotions on that point. I had changed my partner in that process, so I suddenly had, opposed to being sort of arm in arm together, I had to be more of a leadership role in showing him, being his first Olympic Games and him never being in that situation. But certainly defending the gold medal had some added pressure. But at the same time, I spent a lot of time working with my coach and that psychology side of it to try to make that as an advantage, because I'd been there and I'd experienced it before. But I must admit, at the Olympic Games, I struggled to keep weight on. I struggled to sleep. It was a more physical demanding Olympic Games opposed to Beijing, from the weather that we got in London opposed to Beijing. So it took its toll, and I was very grateful to get the job done and also to see the end of the event.
We just have about a minute left. We got one more question.
Malcolm, why is friendship important with your competitors as a sailor?
Very, very good question. Although I only really know sailing well, but I'm sure it's the same with all sports. You know, you get to know these competitors very well. You get to know their families. You get to travel the world and compete against them, and it really is a lifetime. Having that respect on the field of play, but also back on shore, is to me extremely important, because you do need a little bit of luck when you go to win, and you need to know that the competitor will not, use rules or use, you know, life in an unfair way. And you'd like to think that you play this game the same way back at them. You know, to me, that's one of the core values of being a good person. And actually, one of the things that my coach used to always say is, you know, work hard, be good to the world, and the world will repay you with you fulfilling your dreams and your goals. So, you know, I think that's a really good mantra that you should have in life anyway, let alone be sport or, you know, when you wake up in the morning to do your normal day job.
Great stuff, as always, from SailSport Talk. This might have been our best episode ever. We had Alex Saligam in studio and, of course, Malcolm Page, two-time Olympic medalist, chief of Olympic sailing, and also a recipient of the Order of Australia as well. Gentlemen, I can't thank you enough. Great show, and keep go USA, right?
Go USA.
I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back.